This is Polling Matters in association with politicalbetting.com. My name is Kieran Pedley. Today we're going to be discussing the Labour leadership contest. Ballots landed this week and Labour members, affiliates and supporters are in the process of choosing their next leader due to be announced at a special conference on September the 12th. But is the contest already all over and Jeremy Corbyn destined to win, as many think? Or could somebody else win? Is there a path to victory for Andy Burnham, Yvette Cooper or even, shock of shocks, Liz Kendall? If not, and the veteran left-winger is destined to win, what happens next? Where does Labour go from here in the near future? And is Jeremy Corbyn genuinely unelectable, as many think, or could he surprise us and do much better than we think? Today I spoke about these issues and more with fellow podcasters Stephen Bush of The New Statesman and Lawrence Yantalapinski of YouGov. I started by asking whether or not this contest really was all over. So Stephen, you've obviously written many times about Jeremy Corbyn. You were one of the first on record to say that you thought that he was going to win. So presumably your mind hasn't changed and you think that Jeremy Corbyn's position now is unassailable.
Yeah, I am pretty confident still that Jeremy Corbyn's going to win. The one sort of fear I have, because it's the thing I kind of, you wake up going, oh God, what if Yvette Cooper somehow squeaks in and destroys my credibility? But the one fear I have is this idea that some of the late sign-ups are people who want to save the Labour Party from Jeremy Corbyn. That feels wholly unlikely to me, but that is, I suppose, the one possibility. There is another, I think, vanishingly small path to victory for a candidate not called Jeremy Corbyn. I find it quite depressing because the candidate who it is a path to victory for is the candidate I have the least time for. But Yvette Cooper is doing what I think is the bold principled thing, as is Liz Kendall, which is effectively saying, I don't agree with this man's politics. I think he will destroy the Labour Party as we know it. Don't vote for him. Andy Burnham is effectively doing a kind of, oh, Jeremy, he's not so bad, maybe he is that bad, but, you know, I could work with him. If the anyone but Corbyn message goes through and the Corbyn vote collapses, I don't think it's not going to go to Liz Kendall, who's been slagging him off from the start. I don't think it's going to go for Yvette Cooper, who's sort of come on board with that and gone, no, actually, I agree with Liz Kendall on that. And you can already start to see people referring to them as a block, which I think is bad for Yvette Cooper's chances. But if there is sudden panic among the Corbyn voters, who obviously are voting now, ballot papers have arrived in some houses, most people have voted by the end of this week, then you can see how the natural home for nervous Corbyn supporters is probably
Andy Burnham. The acceptable face of it.
If you're a little bit concerned about the things you've heard, the attacks by these Labour big beasts, then I can see how perhaps Burnham is your home. I think that's highly unlikely, but I feel there's a 99.9% chance of it being Corbyn. But the only other outcome I can see is that Burnham is the beneficiary of the kind of fear campaign against Corbyn.
So, Lawrence, what did you think? Because, YouGov have obviously been the one pollster that stuck their neck out and put some data out there, which is great and gives us a good understanding of what's going on. The direction of travel from the data you produce seems only to be going one direction. It seems to be that, you know, Jeremy Corbyn is going to win. Do you share Stephen's view? Do you think there's a certain inevitability about it, with the caveat that, you know, things may implode?
Well, the first thing I'll say is I'm going to use a rather tedious phrase here, but to coin the good Lord Ashcroft, our poll at the time was a snapshot, not a prediction. And I hate myself a little bit for using that phrase. But it was. I mean, the thing that you have to remember with our poll is it came out before a third of the electorate had even signed up to the party. So as Stephen says, there is a chance that this was the ABC message really getting through, Alistair Campbell's intervention, and perhaps that pushed a lot of people to sign up to stop Corbyn. And if you also look at it through the other prism of the fact that our poll was several weeks before ballots went out and before people voted, then things can change. What we can say from our poll is, at the time, the snapshot showed that Jeremy Corbyn had a very strong lead. He led amongst pretty much all demographic groups that we tested, new members, not so much with the older members, the pre-2010 members, those who would have voted when David Miliband stood as a candidate. But as we now know, that now makes up just 120,000 members out of a total electorate of 600,000. So I think what we can be confident in saying is that if these new sign-ups look a lot like the previous sign-ups, then it's Jeremy Corbyn's race. However, we just don't know at this moment, and we can't tell. And so I do think that there is a chance for the other candidates, even now, talking today.
And it's, you know, it's probably worth mentioning briefly that it's still a difficult audience to poll, isn't it? I mean, let's be, without being sort of churlish, you know, the polling industry faces many challenges generally with voting intentions. So this is obviously a particularly difficult audience to poll. We've had some questions from social media, from Simon, Alex and Alison, all asking variations of the same question. You know, how do you get a representative audience from this Labour electorate? It must be very difficult when it keeps moving around and you're not 100% sure of what the composition is.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, at the times that we have done the polls in the last couple of weeks, we've looked, I mean, we have had some data from the party that has been passed to us, which has given us an indication of the age, gender and regional composition. Also, likewise, and it's much clearer now, the different groups, so the members, the affiliates, the £3 sign-ups. So you can start to build a sample frame around this whereby you can look to get a representative sample of these people. However, you're right, there are lots of things that we don't know and things that we can't test. There isn't much anchoring for this poll. All we can look at is with those members who were members in 2010, how they voted. So one of the things we did, we made sure that that group had the right proportion of David and Ed Miliband supporters, which might be the wrong choice given that people who supported David Miliband in 2010 may have left the party. But still, we thought that that was a necessary measure to take. So essentially, the way that YouGov operates is that we have this panel of 500,000 people. We have lots of demographic information and lots of other information. One of those pieces of information is being a member of a political party. So we can go to these respondents, we can track them over time, and we can identify them and use them for future surveys. In exactly the same way somebody might come to us and say, I'd like to do a survey of people who buy whiskers. It's very much the same process that we go through to get these Labour members. And so I don't think that the issues are unassailable and things that we can't get over, but it does make it very difficult. And I think we're one of the few people who could actually do this and do this correctly.
I mean, Stephen, one of the great things about proper polls being out there is you can actually look at where these preferences are going. And a big debate now between the Cooper and Burnham campaign is around who is the genuine Stop Corbyn candidate. And they have their different ways of sort of, you know, either taking him on or cozying up to him that you've described earlier. I mean, how do you see that kind of Stop Corbyn campaign going? I mean, do you think that there is, it seems to me like there isn't really one candidate, and perhaps if anyone wants somebody else that isn't Jeremy Corbyn to win, that's the problem that they've got. You know, should they be going to holding their nose and going to Andy Burnham, even if they prefer Cooper, or the other way around? I mean, how do you see that going?
I mean, the caveat first by saying I think that he will win, Corbyn will win by a sufficiently large margin, and the matter won't really arise.
So on the first preference.
On the first preference. Yeah. But, I mean, the difficulty we have is that there are sort of three sources of data. The pattern in CLP nominations, which is entirely self-selecting, it was a pretty accurate barometer of what happened last time around, considering how self-selecting it was. We have the YouGov poll, which I think is likely to be fairly kosher. And then we have the various noises from the campaign teams. Team Cooper say that they are the Beat Burnham campaign. I assume that anything good in a campaign says to me is a lie. The problem is Team Burnham say they're the Beat Corbyn campaign, and again, I assume that's a lie. What I find interesting is the mayoral campaigns and the Kendall campaign all think that Burnham is the Stop Kendall campaign. And the thing I notice is no one who dislikes Yvette is saying Yvette is the Stop Corbyn candidate. There are a lot of MPs who hold Andy Burnham in complete contempt, who are saying publicly and privately, no, you've got to vote for Andy because he is a bad bank full of Corbyn second preferences. And actually, I think Burnham's campaign has been astonishingly bad. I mean, so bad that it should one day, you know, have like a whole book on how not to run a campaign written about it. But mostly people do things for semi-rational reasons. Everything Burnham has done is consistent with a man who knows that a lot of his vote is umming and ahhing between him and Corbyn. We also know there's an element of the Labour membership which is fairly sexist. It doesn't want a woman. You know, more than half of constituency Labour parties endorsed all male tickets of one hue or another. Those have only got two men to go for. We also know Andy Burnham's support, again from constituent nations, seems to be that little bit older. I wrote a piece about, you know, actually how does AV work, and I got two sets of emails thanking me for it. Young people who joined to vote Corbyn, who, you know, haven't voted in a Labour selection before, and elderly people who are voting for Burnham. My instinct is there are probably more exhausts, people who aren't voting for anyone other than Burnham, more people who want a bloke, and more people from the northwest. So I think Burnham probably is the stop Corbyn candidate. The problem then is he really even the stop Corbyn candidate? Isn't he just the kind of diet Corbyn candidate where you still get fat, you still have the same problem, and then at the end of the 5 years, the Corbynites will say, well, we didn't try the real thing.
What do you think, Lawrence?
Well, I think if we're basing this on the poll, it seems more likely that Burnham's second and third preferences will go to Corbyn than Cooper's will. But it's by no means certain. The two figures are within the margin of error of each other. So I would be reluctant to anybody making their decision solely on the back of our poll, given all the caveats we've already discussed, the fact that it's several weeks out of date, there's this whole new selectorate, and I'm not confident in saying that this candidate's the stop Corbyn candidate or this candidate is. So my feel is probably go for the person that you want to win. But I mean, that's kind of a bit wishy-washy. So anecdotally, you'd probably say from the evidence that we've seen that Burnham, particularly given his cozying up to Corbyn of the last few days, you can certainly see why his supporters would perhaps share more with Corbyn than Cooper's and Kendall's would.
Let's assume that Jeremy Corbyn does win. It seems like a fairly safe assumption at the moment. Clearly, he was never supposed to win. You know, this, he was supposed to be on the ballot, do relatively badly. That's the left dealt with. Someone else wins. What happens next for the Labour Party? Because we've got some interesting questions. Andrew Scott Crines has posed a couple of very sensible questions about, you know, where does Labour now go on the EU referendum, or maybe even a second Scottish independence referendum should that happen, if we think it might. And how does the PLP respond to a Corbyn leadership in general? Because, I mean, an interesting piece that I read was by Dan Hodges a couple of days ago, I think it was, talked about the varying degrees of French resistance that, you know, this may the PLP may undertake with Corbyn as leader. So, you know, are people joining the shadow cabinet to hold him back, or are they sort of having nothing to do with it? I mean, Stephen, you know, you've got your finger on the pulse of the Labour Party. Do you think that there even is a coherent response coming, or do you think it's much more disparate?
It's difficult because so many people are on holiday.
Easy to forget.
Candidly, a lot of the people I regard of as pretty sensible barometers of mainstream opinion within the PLP, their answer has been, I'm on the beach with a bottle of Chianti and I'm hoping it's all a horrible nightmare. My instinct is, at the moment there are effectively two camps. There are the, in Dan Hodges' phrase, there's the McKee, who are the ones who are going to stay inside and fight from within, and the resistance, the Free French, who are going to leave and throw stuff from outside. My feeling is there is a growing movement towards the stay from inside camp, because as the scale of Corbyn's likely victory becomes clear, more people are kind of aware that it's not going to be tenable. You can't spit him back out again, because there's a risk that the membership will then go.
At the end of the day, like it or not, this is an incredible democratic mandate that Jeremy Corbyn has, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if he were to win only among £3 supporters, then I think that would make him much, much weaker, because there is a feeling, I do not share it, there is a feeling that the £3 supporters are people out to do the Labour Party harm. If he wins among members and trade unionists, which I think he will, then at that point, that is clearly the verdict of the Labour Party as a whole. So I think people will stick it out. There's a growing sense among Labour's right, and a growing realisation that you cannot just set up these organisations like Labour First or Progress, as satisfying as they are to you, in which you all go, oh, this is the line, oh, we feel good about this. You have to take control of the spaces which are contested with the left. And also the shadow cabinet and the PLP will be the last bastion of the right before. And the thing is, they've been in this situation before. In the 80s, the trade unions were the last bastion of the right. They know that they can, provided they hold one bit of the late of the party's power, continue to fight out. But I don't think that they will surrender control of the one bit where they look not to be in eclipse.
Easy to forget, isn't it, that the Labour membership at the time was overwhelmingly Bennite, whereas actually it was the trade unions that delivered Dennis Healey the deputy leadership, or to a large extent. Lawrence, what's your view on this?
I always think when we're discussing whether or not Jeremy Corbyn can cobble together a shadow cabinet is that in any political party there are enough careerists, enough people who want the top jobs, that he will have no problem filling those positions. I was talking to somebody in Corbyn's campaign about what might happen after the election and got a very coded response that was just, he's going to democratise the party. Now, I'm not entirely sure what that means, but I think we'll see lots of smaller elections, people putting themselves up for these positions. And I think Jeremy Corbyn's sense is he wants to keep this democratising the party going through. This mandate that he's built up and that has swept him to power, he's going to use that to try and fill these positions, which kind of takes a difficult decision out of his hands. I think, like probably most people, that what happens and the control that he can exert on a PLP that doesn't want him is going to be very difficult. I'm torn, and have been since probably our first poll, as to whether or not this could lead to a split in the party. I think if deselections start to be put on the table...
There'll be constituency boundaries redrawn this parliament anyway, so we don't have to even have mass deselections in terms of new rules. There are going to be lots of Labour MPs fighting over fewer seats anyway, aren't there?
Yeah, and I think if you take an MP in a safe Labour seat on the right of the party, with no threat of deselection or losing this nice safe seat, where's the incentive for them personally to push for a split or to try to depose Corbyn? As soon as it starts to look like this nice safe seat is maybe not so safe anymore from within, then I think you start to get to a position whereby a split is put on the table. I'm not saying for one moment I think that there would be a split should Corbyn win. I'm just saying I can see a route to it that potentially is being overlooked.
I mean, Stephen, I'm interested in, you know, Jeremy Corbyn, one imagines, didn't expect that he was going to be leader of the Labour Party. He's potentially going to win this contest with an uncompromising message. But presumably if he intends to lead the Labour Party for any significant length of time, and certainly into a general election, he's going to have to be a bit more conciliatory to the right of his party, isn't he? Otherwise he's going to be dead in the water.
I think people have underestimated how much he does want to win it, and also the level of thought. Yeah, you don't hire Simon Fletcher, who was Ed Miliband's trade union liaison, who's the only person, effectively, in the history of the modern Labour Party to win with a candidate from the left. You know, he won a mandate among members with Ken Livingstone both times. It's just the first time the electoral system among MPs meant he wasn't a candidate. You don't hire someone who I assume was not cheap if your aim is just to piddle around, say some very left-wing things.
So you're not money, though, isn't it?
But even so, I mean, it's a statement of intent, and they hired him very early. They also, immediately on Europe, he's actually done something very clever, which is that he's sent a coded signal to the, you know, 10-15% of Labour Party members who are Eurosceptics, then he is still one of them, while reassuring the people who are pro-European that it is safe to vote for him. I suspect he will actually be a more... Because his bit of the party's big project is to get back control of decision-making and policy. I think Lawrence is exactly right. They know that the second you say to an MP, well, you're going to lose your job anyway, that is the point you get split. I think he'll be better at managing that than people expect. But obviously I can be and have been catastrophically wrong in the past.
I mean, Lawrence, one of the sort of big debates and one of the main counter-arguments against Jeremy Corbyn has been that he's unelectable. This is the message we keep hearing. And obviously, you know, without being able to see into the future, we can't know that for sure. There's been a bunch of different polling over the weekend about this. I think broadly we can sort of split it into two camps. Surveyor and opinion showing polls that are pretty good, actually surprisingly good for Jeremy Corbyn. showing him at least competitive with Andy Burnham, if not, I think, the most likely to win new votes to Labour in the future. Comrades showing a slightly different story, showing him as the most positive, I believe, but also the most negative, actually, when you net the scores together, actually, him having more of a drag on the Labour ticket than an improvement. But what's your sense of this perception of electability and polling specifically around that at the moment? Because it feels to me it's, you know, we can have our judgment calls on what we think his policy agenda might do, or the types of voters and demographics we think he needs to appeal to win, and whether he will or not. But isn't opinion polling on that very issue at the moment quite difficult to really get anything meaningful from?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something that everybody wants to do. Predict the future. Tell us what Jeremy Corbyn will do and whether or not he'll be elected. I mean, both those polls, I mean, it's not a surprise really to me that they showed different results as they were asking different things. The Comrades poll was asking the public to be pundits and predict where they thought Jeremy Corbyn would be, which will get a very much a top of mind how people are feeling. Whereas the Servation poll gave people clips, and then really when you start to give people clips, they're going to be basing a lot of their responses on the clips. And obviously Jeremy Corbyn was talking about renationalisation, all those kind of things.
It's an interesting approach, isn't it? Because I think on the one hand it's pretty good because it actually, rather than just a name on a paper that you...
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think
then actually you are beholden to the clip as well. So it's
pros and cons. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing to do. And, you know, it's one of those things that you'd love to see, you know, an entire hustings, show people entire hustings. But really, if you're doing that in a survey environment, if you've got any respondents left at the end of it, I would be amazed.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to electability, I mean, again, I'm going to caveat that this with myself and that I thought Ed Miliband would be Prime Minister based on public opinion not that long ago. So when you look at Jeremy Corbyn's policies, the direction of travel, it's very easy to say that his policies will not be electable, that nobody will vote for them, that non-voters are very much like voters in their concerns, their worries. They worry Labour will spend too much, tax too much. It won't be very sensible with the public purse. Now, all of those things I think are true. I think those opinion poll findings do tell us something about what the electorate wants. But I think Jeremy Corbyn's supporters, they don't necessarily care about that. What they want to do is shift the centre ground. And they feel that with Jeremy Corbyn going hard on a left-wing ticket will help to shift that. We saw with the Tories bringing in the living wage, the Labour Party campaigning on something which the Tories move towards. And I guess the hope for the left is that Corbyn will help to do that and shift it back over. I'm unconvinced. I do not think that, based on all the evidence we have, that Jeremy Corbyn's policies will be electable.
I mean, Stephen, I guess the one thing that people kind of ignore in this debate, both positively and negatively, depending on what side you come from, is what do the Tories do? Because, you know, they're obviously, you know, anything that happens to Labour is completely and utterly directly related to what the Tories do, isn't it? How they deal with Jeremy Corbyn, how they actually deal with themselves internally around the EU referendum and the replacement for David Cameron, of course. If we take David Cameron at his word and he does stand down before 2020, that's a huge deal, isn't it? I mean, is it possible that the public will just not take to, let's say, George Osborne or Boris Johnson, and therefore, actually, 2020 is much more in play than, if for even Jeremy Corbyn, than the pundits think?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the big question with Corbyn is whether or not it means that the Conservatives go, right, we can let it all hang out. We can actually be a bit more right-wing than we are. Because the temptation... The Tories don't have a system where, you know, they throw out as many people can get 35 nominations. It will be a top two. So it will be Osborne and A.N. Other. The question is how much A.N. Other feels and what they want to do is beat Osborne by going to his right and effectively running on a ticket of, look at the Labour Party, they're a catastrophe. Yes, it's time for, you know, Theresa Johnson or Boris May or whoever it is to have some real conservative policies. Then I suppose maybe you get into a situation where enough people can have reservations about both to vote Lib Dem, and maybe you get back into Hung Parliament territory. But I mean, I basically think people want three things from parties. They want them to not waste their money. They want this idea that they can stand up to Putin or whatever, apart for a moment the question of the fact that Cameron has done a lamentable job at that. And And they kind of basically want to know that the party won't, I'm trying to think of a non-indelicate way of putting this. You know, basically people aren't against welfare spending or immigration, but they want the sense of fairness. And you win based on whether or not you can address those three concerns. Ultimately, this is a guy who, in a not particularly heated interview with Christian Guru Murphy, lost it. I am not convinced that he is able to navigate just like the bear pit of being leader of the opposition, let alone the policy stuff. I mean, there's these seven questions the Jewish Chronicle have asked, which you can argue, I am more dovish on lots of issues than the Jewish Chronicle, but you can argue about the merits of, two in particular of the questions. But ultimately, if you don't realise that as leader of the opposition, you just have to answer the questions and move on, then everything from Desert Island Discs on up is going to become Stations of the Cross for a Corbyn leadership. And that is before you get to the question of whether or not the policy mix is too left-wing.
This level of scrutiny is just a world away from anything that he's ever had in his entire career.
I think because that is really the other thing about... So why are the other three candidates so bad? One of them only became an MP in 2010, and the other two grew up in this era of Labour hegemony. They have never been in a fight, in a difficult fight. They were able to hide in 2010. And actually, both Yvette Cooper and Andy Burnham hid during the 2015 election. Where were they when it was getting gnarly over the SNP? They weren't going out and doing the difficult interviews. These people have not been trained to be fighters, which is why they're being, eaten by Corbyn. But Corbyn hasn't been trained to be a fighter either. The more scary thing for the Labour Party, I think, is if Osborne is able to do what I suspect he wants, which is to actually... In some ways, I think the people saying he will move the Tories left are right. He just won't move them very far to the left, but they only need to move an inch to the left to destroy the Labour Party.
Can he declare austerity over?
Well, yeah, I mean, this thing is, so if the economy... I don't think they will hit any of their targets, but let's say for a moment they do. I mean, at that point, the Labour Party is in serious trouble anyway. But what they can even do is... deregulate planning a bit, because they'll know that NIMBYs will be even more terrified of Corbyn than they are of houses. They can get some serious house building done, so by 2022 you have Osborne homes everywhere. They can be a bit tougher on corporations, because again they'll be even more frightened of Jeremy Corbyn, and they can raise a little bit more, they can lower the welfare cap, and at that point Labour's space is really quite squeezed. The terrifying thing is an Osborne government which moves a little bit to the left, because that is where Labour dies.
What do you think, Lawrence? I mean, there's obviously the EU referendum to come, and I'm sure YouGov will be producing lots of numbers around that. It could be quite an interesting dynamic. I mean, I think the current narrative has been very much that it's probably going to be okay in the sense that Britain will stay in the European Union. But do you think there's if Jeremy Corbyn's leader of the Labour Party, maybe that leftist... sympathy with Greece, sort of solidarity with Greece, sort of slice of opinion that's within the party might make that battle a bit more, ambiguous than we might currently think it is.
Well, all predictions of the EU referendum have always been based on Cameron fighting for in, leading the Tories, somebody leading Labour fighting for in, and then UKIP. I mean, we should probably mention the Lib Dems, but I mean, there isn't that many of them anymore. But, so if you have Jeremy Corbyn comes in, and if he does decide, you know what, I'm going to campaign for out, regardless of what he does with the rest of his MPs, if the leader of one of the major parties in Britain is campaigning for out, then I think it makes it much more difficult. And also, if you have the Owen Jones and Jeremy Corbyn's, the left really pushing hard and fighting with UKIP, then I think it makes it much less predictable. I would have said before the general election that I was sure that it would be an in vote and probably quite a convincing in. But that was because I always thought that the leader of the three of the four main parties would be campaigning for in, if not on a joint ticket, they'd be going to different parts of the country, talking to different people, but all with the same message. I think if that message is different, and one of them, I mean, it's the same as if the Tories decided to elect a big outer, Farage type, then I think that would completely change it as well. So I think it's much less predictable now. But my suspicion is that Jeremy Corbyn will probably relent to the PLP and campaign for in if he's elected leader. But I'm basing that on very...
We'll move on. We'll finish with some sort of looking into the future for Labour, but briefly, what about the Lib Dems here? Because, I mean, obviously, yes, we know that they're what, 8 seats now, isn't it? And, you know, they've got a new leader. I mean, is there an opportunity for them with a Jeremy Corbyn-led Labour Party? I mean, I suppose it's harder for them if he's just, you know, unequivocally anti-austerity, that whole idea that Tim Farron can perform that role and lead the Liberal Democrats' recovery from the left is virtually impossible then. But maybe not in defections or a split Labour Party. Is there a route back to the Lib Dems being the kind of sensible version of the left?
I mean, I'm going to throw open some theories, and I imagine Lawrence will tell me that they're completely wrong. My instinct is that tuition fees and the Lib Dems is a lot like the winter of discontent was for the Labour Party. It's going to take a lot longer than they expect, or most pundits think, for the smell to get off them. I think there will be an awful lot of people who instinctively vote left, who will not want to vote for Jeremy Corbyn, will not want to vote Conservative, and won't have a natural home. The trouble is Tim Farron really leading the Lib Dems in a direction that appeals to that kind of person? It feels to me that he's trying to compete in that old Charlie Kennedy space of slightly to the left of an electable Labour Party. But the problem is that space is going to be dominated by the Labour Party and the Greens, who wouldn't you rather vote for them? My instinct is there will be some Labour voters who will find the Greens their natural home. The Lib Dems may do semi-well in some places where they still have a semi-active local party as the sort of reservoir of that. I think basically there will be Labour voters who will find a home somewhere. My instinct is there are a lot of barriers to it being the Lib Dems, but there are lots of people who I don't think will vote for Jeremy Corbyn or the Conservative Party. So,
I mean, I'd say in terms of how the Lib Dems pick up lots of Labour people distraught at Jeremy Corbyn, I think it's quite difficult, because I think a lot of the people who are going for Jeremy Corbyn are the young, very liberal parts of the British left, which Tim Farron may struggle to pick up, particularly given, you know, some of his views on society as opposed to the economy. But I think, I mean, you can certainly see it was very easy for the Lib Dems to be left of Tony Blair's Labour Party. I think it's impossible for them to be left of Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party. So how do they position themselves? Do they then position themselves as the sensible, like they did in 2015 general election, the heart,
with such
the
success.
Head? Exactly. Yeah. It's very difficult for them to portray
that
themselves.
That doesn't necessarily make it a wrong message or a message that can't resonate in the future.
Well, I don't know. This comes back to David Laws' theory, which is, you know, kind of fairly widely shared within both of them. The Lib Dems can't do well without Labour doing well, because there's an element to which the default setting of British politics is conservative, so you kind of have to give people permission to vote Liberal Democrat or Labour. But there's also, because everyone sort of thinks and given an equal choice, the Lib Dems will always go with the Labour Party, even now, the Labour Party has to be a more safe option than it would be. I just think, you know, if you're someone in Cornwall who used to vote Lib Dem and then didn't because you were scared of Ed Miliband and the SNP this time, then
You're going to stick with the Tories. I think had this been a Charlie Kennedy-led Liberal Democrats, I think there would be a much more credible threat. And I also think there would have been much more likely for Labour defections to the Lib Dems. I can't see Labour MPs defecting to Tim Farron's Liberal Democrats. So I think the Lib Dems will, like you say, I think until the Labour Party starts to do well, the Lib Dems may find their vote sticking around the level it's at the moment.
We haven't mentioned Scotland, of course, and, you know, there is a certain logic to this idea that the SNP are to the left of Labour. Whether you think that is true in reality or not is maybe a different discussion. What do we think of going back to Jeremy Corbyn? Again, assuming he wins, presumably he's got quite a good chance of forging some sort of a Labour recovery in Scotland, or is the reality that the days of 40 seats have gone and never to come back, so actually there's a risk that he makes some gains there, but then for every one vote he wins in Scotland, he loses two in England?
I think Scottish Labour are in for a hiding for a significant amount of time to come. If you look at the British election study research, you can see that Scottish people who went with the SNP were motivated a great deal by independence. That is what the Scottish people want. Those, the 45 who the vast, vast majority of them stuck with the SNP, they're not going to go back to a unionist party. I mean, we've already seen Jeremy Corbyn be called a red Tory by SNP supporters in Scotland. So, and
Brown and Blair, right?
Of course. But what you tend to find is Scots like to tell people that they're much more left-wing than the English. Whereas when you actually look at their views on lots of policies and areas like that, you actually find they look a lot like English voters. So I think it's kind of a myth that Scotland's this last left-wing bastion of Britain. But I think the SNP played that very well. The perception, obviously, is more important than the reality. Mm. But I don't really see any Labour leader doing it. And I think, actually, Kezia Dugdale, it has a much better chance of winning people in Scotland if she's given time and energy and effort up there than Jeremy Corbyn necessarily has.
So, Stephen, I mean, if we accept that to be true, and actually the Labour Party ran for a long, hard slog in Scotland, and as some analysis you produced after the election sort of really showed that, what that then means in terms of what Labour needs to do in England to have any chance of winning anything, does Labour need to become a much more, in inverted commas, English party, or is that one nation rhetoric still ultimately where salvation lies?
I mean, so there are kind of three scenarios. Scenario one, Scotland, either because it goes its own way, or, and I actually agree with pretty much all of Lawrence's analysis there, remains unwinnable. In which case, obviously they have to get a majority in England, but they, even in 2005, if you vanish the Scottish MPs, yes, it was notionally hung, but it's hung in the same way the Welsh Assembly is hung. Mm-hmm. Labour can do what it wants because its opposition is so split that it will never, ever be outvoted or voted down unless it manages to pick the one issue which unites Plaid Cymru, the Conservatives, the Greens, the Lib Dems and UKIP, which is just never going to happen. You know, even in 2005, they were able to achieve this. I think. And also there's an element of the one of Labour's problems in England is it seems like a party which wants to use Scotland and Wales to impose itself on England. The fact it can't sort of takes care of that perception problem now. It's going to have to win seats in England, but I don't think it's going to struggle. You know, ultimately, Labour struggles where there are lots of private sector jobs, where WH Smith is the only bookshop, and where there aren't any ethnic minorities. And now, there used to be a Scottish exceptionalism, there isn't now, but now actually their problem is quite simple. Scenario two, where Corbyn does trigger a revival in Scotland, but a collapse in England, I mean, that kind of is illusory anyway, because then the SNP will be able to argue with justification that they are two separate polities and you have to go it alone. But no, I don't. I just think Bridget Phillipson wrote a brilliant piece on this, where she basically said the problem in England is that Labour doesn't appeal to a certain type of voter, of whom there are a lot in England. But this idea that singing Jerusalem a bit more would help them, I just don't buy it.
So let's look into the future, sort of combining a few different questions from social media. You know, what do we see Jeremy Corbyn leading Labour into the 2020 general election? And then, if not, where do we see that going? I appreciate it's a speculation, but hey, it's a podcast, so let's do that. one of the particular questions there around that is, can a moderate, in inverted commas, ever win the Labour leadership again? Who wants to take that one?
Of course. So I've been rereading Life, Birth and Death of the SDP, and the reason why the SDP broke off, one of the structural reasons is Labour did not have one member, one vote, and it was felt that this would advantage the right of the Labour Party, and the right of the Labour Party couldn't possibly win under any of the systems that Labour had in place, so the SDP left. Now the dream of the SDP has been achieved, and one member, one vote is about to elect a left-wing home, and it turned out right-wing leaders were perfectly able to be elected with a system that the SDP felt they couldn't win. You know, I suspect in 5 years' time we'll be talking about how the left can't win on a one-member, one vote. Yeah, ultimately, yeah, I have a lot of time for Liz Kendall and Yvette Cooper as politicians and thinkers. I like Andy Burnham a lot as a bloke, but they've ran three fairly drab and awful campaigns which have offended their electorates.
So a better candidate
would be Jeremy Corbyn.
The question I think I always ask myself is, would the 1994 Tony Blair, not 2001, 2005, 2010, 2015, the 1994 Tony Blair up against Jeremy Corbyn in this situation, who do we think would win? I'm not certain that Tony Blair would manage to do it, but I think he would have a much better chance. And I think what Stephen says is exactly right. It comes down to the campaigns that they've run and the way that they've gone after Jeremy Corbyn. And I've actually found some of the way that the campaigns have tried to frame the debate in a Jeremy Corbyn will do this, we must stop him. Jeremy Corbyn's going to do that, we must stop him. And there's been too little of this is what the future of Britain looks like under me being the leader. I think the one other candidate who's done that really well is Liz Kendall. But unfortunately, the members are not buying what she's selling, and I think that's been a big problem there. But I think the right can win again. I think they'll find it difficult, and I think the PLP will maybe need to think about who it nominates a bit more. But I think a candidate from the right of the party could certainly win in the future.
Is the irony, Stephen, that, obviously Ed Miliband had a crushing defeat, but perhaps this idea that the Miliband message with a better face or a better leader, different lead singer of the band or whatever, however you want to say it, might end up being actually where the next Labour government comes from? Because it feels to me like the idea of an Arch Blairite ever winning the leadership again feels incredibly unlikely. I'm not even sure the unions will wear that. If you would take the conventional wisdom view that Jeremy Corbyn is not going to win, he may not even fight the election campaign itself, and surely the compromise then is some kind of Ed Miliband redux who may look and sound a bit more like a Prime Minister.
I mean, the thing is, I think there will never be an election again in which we have a candidate who is a Blairite, quote-unquote, partly because Liz Kendall, from a technical perspective, doesn't meet that definition. Unlike David Miliband, she doesn't owe her career in politics to the patronage of Tony Blair. And the thing that a lot of people on the right of Labour Party are now saying privately is they realise this entirely self-destructive battle over, these kind of tiny variations of opinion between Yvette Cooper and Liz Kendall have been an utter disaster for both of them. I think what is more likely is that there will be a candidate from Labour's right. And we were basically saying all of these things about Gaitskellites in the 70s and 80s. Oh, Jenkins can't win, Healey can't win. Well, Tony Blair, you might look back now and go, oh, there's a golden thread of thought running back to... But the whole point of Labour's modernised is they modernise, they reinvent themselves. They don't run around the country screaming three general elections if you're Liz Kendall, sure start if you're Yvette Cooper, or whatever you think's going to get you a cheer if you're Andy Burnham. I do just think...
Not the official polling matters here.
But I do just think that it is very easy to read into the collapse of a particular part of a tendency overall. I mean, ultimately, the kind of Mandelsonian intensely relaxed with people being filthy rich as long as they pay their taxes is basically still where the country is, and they want people to play by the rules and not take liberties, and that's how they feel on every issue, from the economy to welfare to foreign policy to yada yada yada. So the next person who wins an election for Labour, if that ever happens again, will be in that space. The thing is, if they are adept enough to win that space in the centre, then not going to be so maladroit that they offend the Labour Party's electorate.
It's a bit like David Cameron, who perfectly reveres Margaret Thatcher, for example, but would never ever class. Well, I don't think would class himself as a very vocal Thatcherite.
No, I mean, the thing is, what is the difference between David Cameron and Ken Clark politically, in terms of where they took the Conservative Party as leaders? It's marginal at best. What is the difference between the leadership campaigns they fought? Well, that is the difference. And, Clarkites or Blairites will not win the leadership election ever. But Tony Blair didn't fight as a Blairite. He actually fought a Cameron-style leadership election. He appeased his party, he whispered the right things, he nudged and winked at the country, and then he went on and governed the way he wanted to. That is still what Labour's right.
It was very much a campaign for its time with Tony Blair. And I think that is what a candidate from whichever wing of the party needs to do. It needs to fight a campaign for its time. And I think Corbyn perhaps is fighting the one most for this time, wherever that leads us, wherever that takes us over the next, couple years, 5 years. Maybe longer, I think.
Okay. We're almost out of time, but I guess one word answers, Lawrence and Stephen.
Oh, no.
Do you think Jeremy Corbyn will lead Labour into the 2020 election?
Lawrence?
No.
That sounds like a not particularly convinced. No.
Yeah, no.
No. Stephen?
I'm also going to go with no, but I reserve the right to U-turn on it.
as the best pundits do. Well, Stephen and Lawrence, thanks very much for your time, guys. That was Polling Matters. My name is Kieran Pedley. A big thanks to my guests, Stephen Bush and Lawrence Janta Lipinski. Stay tuned for some more episodes of Polling Matters in the coming weeks as we enter the party conference season. The music you're about to hear is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under Creative Commons. Thanks for listening.